It is known throughout the academic world, the medical world. It is known throughout the Air Force. And above all, it is known throughout the CIA that the air intelligence at Wright-Patterson Field has in its possession a spacecraft, 31 feet in diameter, and it is entirely undamaged except for a hole, small hole, broken in the plastic dome, the transparent plastic dome which covered the cockpit. And because of this accident in space, the 12 small human beings died suddenly of decompression in the purely mortal way that the Russian astronauts perished last year in a similar accident of decompression during reentry. They were not shot down by our fighter planes. They suffered an operational loss. However, in this particular case, it was very fortunate that our alert radar net in the western states had the UFO on its screen. In fact, three radar stations were tracking an unidentified object at immense altitude and traveling at unbelievable speed when it stopped, fluttered, went out of control, and fell circling toward the Earth. Because three radar stations were locked on it, they were able to triangulate the point at which it reached Earth. That point was 3 miles west of the small town of Aztec, New Mexico, in the northern part of the state near the Colorado line. At that time, I owned and operated a ranch in the high mountains of northern New Mexico. It happened in my neighborhood. All available law enforcement officers were rushed to the scene, and planes were flown from the nearest major Air Force base, which is Edwards Air Force Base in the Mojave Desert. And as they landed, there was a silvery, gleaming, disc-shaped spacecraft standing on a tripod landing gear. Apparently, it made an automatic landing after its occupants had died. And as the local sheriffs approached with drawn guns, oh, you may be sure the guns were drawn. Let anything new appear, and the guns are drawn. They surrounded the spacecraft and peered into the cockpit. And there, slumped over their instruments, motionless, were 12 small men. The Air Force arrived, and due to their ingenuity, it was quite ingenious, but I won't go into the technical details, they managed to get the door open, and the medical officers said that the bodies, the bodies were still limp and warm. They had been dead only a short time. They were put aboard a hospital plane and flown to the nearest large mortuary, which is at Edwards Air Force Base, where they have, as do all large military establishments, a large refrigerated morgue. After all, a very large base devoted to death would need a morgue. And the city of Tampa has a refrigerated morgue for overnight visitors who can't find hotel accommodations. And Edwards Air Force Base received this, and in February 1948. Now that was at the one of the worst periods of the Cold War, and the president was notified, but the president didn't come. No one knew quite what to do. The bodies were carefully preserved in cryonic suspension, which is not, as the Air Force spokesman on the television program yesterday in ridiculing and abusing me, said that Bob Carr says that little green men are being kept in the frozen food locker. You see, you just change a few words and you can convert the story of the century into a bit of idiocy. First of all, they weren't green. They were fair-skinned. All were males. They were between 3 and 4 feet in height, with 3.5 being about the average. All had light hair, differing shades of light hair, but on the brownish-yellow side. All had blue eyes. All had perfect teeth without any dental work. All were superb physical specimens with no asymmetrical development. They're dressed in American clothes. They could pass unnoticed on the streets of Tampa as small men or as children. Now, it was decided, which do you want to hear about first? The really important news of what our leading metallurgists, electronics experts, and aeronautical engineers were able to find out about the spacecraft itself, or do you want to hear about the bodies? First, let's have a vote. How many of you want to hear about the construction and content of the spacecraft itself? Right down. Now, how many of you will not rest easy until you hear about the autopsy? Oh, this is by far a majority. And frankly, it's human. Who wants to hear about a giant solenoid when you can hear about an autopsy?
Professor Robert Carr talks about that autopsy in just a moment.
One body was selected for autopsy by a carefully screened group of government physicians. Six performed the autopsy. It was photographed. Motion pictures were made. You may be sure it was done in an operating theater under many watchful eyes. And as our unfortunate little visitor from far away was dismembered and disemboweled, and his organs were laid out and identified, he was found to have the same organs that a human being has and in about the same place. He was human. His blood type was human. Genes and chromosomes would match up with those of an Earth woman. Either we are their lost colony or they are our lost cousins. The biologically, the chances of utterly unrelated life developing across the aching immensities of interstellar space and coming out with two absolutely identical species, the odds are like, well, it's like rolling 37 sevens in a row in a crap game. It just couldn't happen. It would take one millions of years. No. We are somehow related. They came here probably because they too are oxygen breathers and water drinkers. If they had been ammonia-breathing turtles, they could have gone to Jupiter or some congenial place. But no, they were like ourselves, so they sought out our planet. Undoubtedly, there has been an unbroken link going back a long time.
As his audience sat glued to the edge of their seats at the International Inn, Professor Robert Carr got down to the nitty-gritty of the autopsy performed on the body of a dead spaceman he claims the Air Force recovered in the wastelands of northwestern New Mexico in 1948.
Everything was quite normal until the celebrated brain surgeon got out his horrid little saw and sawed open the skull and laid bare the right hemisphere of the brain. And then the six assembled surgeons gasped, because they realized that they were looking upon something no human eyes had ever before beheld. There, on the body of a vigorous young man estimated to be 30 years of age in Earth time, could have been a small Olympic athlete. There in his skull was the brain of a human being several hundred years old. The surgeons said, the brain specialists said, that never had they seen the surface of a brain so deeply and so intricately convoluted. And as you all know, the convolutions of the brain are an indication, an infallible indication, of both the age of the brain and the state of its intellectual development. A feeble-minded person of any age has an almost smooth brain surface. Newborn baby has a smooth brain surface. But as age and intellectual development occur, the convolutions become more pronounced. These are little folds and rivulets. You've seen them. They had never seen so highly convoluted a brain. And if the same biological standards apply to their planet that apply to this, there was a man several hundred years old who had been spared the infirmities of age and had never known senility. What a gift this would be if they could tell us how they do it. Ponce de Leon and his fountain of youth. If they could share their medical secrets and other hygienic secrets with us, what a gift this would be to the human race. How much more amazing than the weapons I must tell you about, or the means of propulsion that the Russians at this moment are doing everything to try to capture, would be the gift of life to the human race. This is what the Air Force is striking aside every day by armed attacks upon unidentified flying objects, which have done nothing hostile toward the United States except possibly fail to answer the recognition signal of the day in the right idiom. Major Donald E. Kehoe, in his latest book, Aliens from Space, documents over 1,000 instances where fighter planes have been scrambled to attack harmless UFOs with the most deadly weapons that we have developed, simply to try to shoot one down. They have never succeeded. Certain pilots, during debriefing sessions, shaking, ashen-faced, have told their commanding officers that they got within gun range. They opened up with four cannon. Not one shell ever struck the skin of the UFO. Apparently, they are surrounded by a powerful force field of electromagnetic emissions, which is probably intended to protect them from meteorites, which, of course, are very dangerous, but will certainly make bullets curve enough to miss them. Think what that secret would be worth. This great age of the beautiful young man has profound psychic significance as well. Think what an opportunity it would be to develop the psychic powers, to develop culture, to develop literature, history, and how little space travel would mean to a race whose lifespan was several times longer than our lifespan. Ladies and gentlemen, I am an old man, a retired professor. I have spent my life in the pursuit, however feeble and limping, the pursuit of truth. And I can tell you that the central tragedy of the human race on this planet is not the curse of war, horrible as that is. It is not the burden of poverty, inexcusable as that is on a rich planet. It is not the grief and pain of disease, even, which is merely a measure of our ignorance, because our scientists are making valiant efforts to overcome disease. No, the central tragedy of human life is so commonplace that most of us never face it. It is the tragic brevity of human life. A man or woman just about learns to do his or her job well, and we retire them. They live a little longer and get a few glimpses of understanding, of comprehension, of psychic insight, and we bury them. The life is over. Long before 100 years, a 100-year-old person is quite a curiosity and is usually quite feeble. Or, as a Pennsylvania Dutch farmer said to me in a very pithy statement, which is much more eloquent than my plea, so slow we get smart, und so quick we get old. That is the tragedy of human life, and that is one of the secrets that our friends from space, that is one of the benefits they might bring us in this 20th century. If we would only stop shooting at them and let them land in peace at a designated safe zone in the southeastern United States, southwestern United States, at a certain part of New Mexico where there are no military installations for many miles, would be plainly designated as a safe landing zone. This is Operation Lure. And I want to tell you that in the entire 25 years that we have been shooting at them, there is not one authenticated case of a UFO intentionally harming a human being. Imagine what patience and what forbearance for them to have been fired upon and chased and repulsed in their efforts to be friendly, and not once to have harmed a human being. Let us prepare our minds then by banishing fear. Let us put aside all bogeymen and silly talk of little green men and bug-eyed monsters. And furthermore, those who talk that way, let us gently correct them. They are doing a very great disservice to our country, especially to the children. A little child called me up in the middle of the night last night. Is it true we're being invaded from Mars? That's cruel to children. There is nothing to be afraid of. Now, we can also stop calling them UFOs, because if anything in the sky has ever been fully identified, it is the so-called unidentified flying object. The Air Force has spent millions photographing them up close, studying them, measuring them, and have quite a collection of photographs, hundreds of feet of motion picture film, and all of this, of course, had to be withheld from the American people. Not through any sinister conspiracy, but for our own good. Because back in the days when this material evidence came into the possession of Air Intelligence, most of you are too young to remember, but we were in the worst days of the so-called Cold War. People here in Tampa were digging air raid shelters in their backyards. If a truck backfired, school children dove under the desks thinking the Russians had attacked. And when the spacecraft itself with the 12 dead occupants was picked up, then, of course, the Central Intelligence Agency had to intervene. Up until that time, it had been an Air Force problem, chasing spooks, chasing something. But when a foreign intrusion occurs, the appearance of the CIA on the scene is prima facie evidence that the UFOs are real. Let me repeat. The CIA would never have taken over had there not been real UFOs from another world. How foreign can you get? So, they, in their wisdom, caused the Brookings Institution in Washington to make a national survey to predict what the effect on the American psychology would be if the president came on the air and calmly announced, ladies and gentlemen, these things you're seeing are real. They're from another world. They are piloted by intelligent, small human beings like ourselves. There is nothing to be afraid of. And will everybody please stop shooting at them? The Brookings Institution replied that this must never be released because the American people are teetering on the ragged edge of hysteria already. The nervousness, the tension over the Cold War is so great that for the president to make such a statement official, to give it sanction, would be too much. Too many people would go over the deep end.